I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, another tragedy underscores the danger of our state's soft-on-crime policies. Plus, a local sheriff rescinds a school board endorsement, giving in to the demands of fringe activists. And the state prison's chief celebrates what she calls landmark protections for transgender inmates. That and more coming up today on Undivided. You can support the show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback as we speak. A day of resistance on the University of Washington campus. What are they resisting exactly? I'm trying to figure out what this protest is in resistance of. It's obviously in support of terrorism. Flyer that went out from Super UW, which is a group at the University of Washington, said Super UW mobilizes for day of resistance protest for Palestine. So it's happening today, right now as we speak, at Red Square at the University of Washington. I will say this freaks me out a little bit because we saw what happened in Kirkland when there was pro-Palestine, pro-Israel protesters, and they clashed in the street in Kirkland of all places. So this is happening at UW. I mean, you know, and in this, can you put the flyer back up? You've got, again, this imagery of the Hamas terrorists coming down on a parachute. They came down into a music festival and murdered innocent people. It's insane. And actually, our own Matt Gilbert, Undivided superfan,
he's there.
He says he let us know that he's over at UW Red Square, which I hope you're careful. Because this, I mean, people who support terrorism, and again, that's what this is. We can have a nuanced conversation and say, hey, we can talk about, you know, innocent lives in Gaza that have been impacted by Israel's strikes after the Hamas terror attacks. We can talk about Israeli politics and policies. But when your flyer explicitly is celebrating an image of a Hamas terrorist who is parachuting to the earth to kill innocent people, you are there in support of terrorism on the campus of the University of Washington. And so certainly, look, I'm all for free speech, I guess. If you want to utilize the free speech that this country gives you to celebrate terrorism. But I certainly hope that things are safe at the University of Washington today. It freaks me out. If you're there, please be safe. Matt Gilbert, please be safe. I mean, take some pictures and video while you're there and let us know what's going on.
Please do.
But I mean, gosh, what is happening on our college campuses? It's insane. You know, we just talked about UW the other day and Harry the Husker throwing darts at the faces of conservative Supreme Court justices.
You keep saying Husker.
Oh, Harry the Husky. Come on. Old habits die hard.
Yes. But yeah, and, no, I don't know what's going on because there are some people saying that these protesters are very connected to the university. We're trying to figure out how closely.
Right. Who are they? Because again, the imagery, you can't spin that imagery in the flyer into, oh, we're just supporting, you know, the rights of Palestinians to exist and we don't want any innocent lives. No, that's not what you're doing. You're celebrating terrorism. And then I wish I had saved the statement or had it pulled up of that UW sent us in regard to Harry the Husky thing, because it was something to the effect of, you know, that's not the environment we want to foster on the UW campus. Is a sporting mascot throwing darts at the faces of conservative justices. Is this the environment that you
I did go back and read that statement to see how it applied, but they were very specific about the Husky.
Yeah, so, but here's the thing. If it were Nazis, like right-wing white nationalists holding a rally at the University of Washington, anti-Jew right-wing, you know, extremists, do you think that the UW would allow it to kind of take place passively, or that they wouldn't be some sort of active freak-out from the collective media and politicians about this happening on the campus? Of course there would be. Of course there would be. There's no question in my mind. But apparently if you're not white and you hate Jews, then that's completely fine. And it's like, okay, come on. Oh, you know. So anyway, we'll monitor that. Just wanted to let you guys know that's happening. I'm certain it's going to be all over social media today. All right. A tragic, tragic example of our state soft on crime policies and the bail issue that we've been discussing over and over on the show, which is you have people who clearly pose a danger, clearly to pose a danger to the community, sometimes being given very low bail, sometimes being released without having to post any bail at all. And this just breaks my heart. So I saw these headlines coming out last night, and I just thought, you know, of course there's going to be so much this story to dig into. So there was a Seattle man, he was out of jail awaiting a child rape sentencing. A sentencing, so not even trial. Awaiting sentencing for a child rape charge, who's now accused of killing his girlfriend, beating his longtime girlfriend to death. His name is John Curran. He's 42 years old. He's been booked now into the King County Jail on charges of second-degree murder. They say that police say he killed his girlfriend on September 29th in their home in North Seattle. And here's the thing. I think immediately when those headlines came across, we were all like, well, what do you mean he was out of jail awaiting sentencing for child rape? Why would you be out of jail awaiting sentencing for child rape? So the background of this case, it was one victim, same day, but two different counties. So there was two instances of alleged child rape, same victim, same day, in Snohomish County and King County. So there were kind of two simultaneous investigations. And we spoke to the King County Prosecutor's Office because we were like, why would you have not asked for a high bail to keep him behind bars? And they kind of punted, and Nicole, you spoke to their spokesperson, so feel free to chime in on his characterization of it. But basically, Snohomish County cut him loose.
Well, Snohomish County, I think, acted first.
Yes.
And then King County just kind of followed suit.
Because King County's like, okay, technically, Snohomish County already acted. This guy's out of jail. He's returning for all his court appearances there. So we might have a hard time proving that he's a flight risk or at risk of reoffending because Snohomish County already cut him loose while he's going through the court system on this child rape allegation. And so we're not going to step in and be like, okay, it's same technical case, same victim, same day. And they also told us, and this was shocking to me, because you're on the phone with them, you come back in, and you told me, and they illustrated it to us in an email as well, the King County Prosecutor's Office says state law does not consider third-degree rape of a child a violent offense.
How is any crime against a child is physical not considered
a violent offense? And maybe it's because it's third degree, but how is anything involving rape not a violent offense? Because, of course, if someone's accused of a violent offense, that's just one more thing a judge can use or prosecutors can use to argue that we need to have a higher monetary bail. So here you have this guy, which the state apparently doesn't consider, you know, a potentially violent offender.
And especially because his job, apparently he was like a coach and he was in charge of student or kid activities. I mean, he was a predator and he's working with kids. This is a predator. And you don't think that's a risk to society? It's unbelievable to me. But again, just soft on the criminal.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's absolutely disgusting, but it's like, this is the natural reason, this is the stuff, it's like, why do we expect different outcomes when this is what our criminal justice system does? When our criminal justice system doesn't believe that someone accused of raping a child not once but twice would pose a danger to the community significant enough where they should have to post a high monetary bail before they get out and await trial, and certainly while they await sentencing.
Right, and from our perspective, we were, again, like, who is the judge? Who'd made this decision? But then it really sounds like the judges are following suit on this is the lawmakers that we need to go after at this point to make these punishments more mandatory sentencing.
Especially when they involve kids. Yes, because the rape charges he faced in Seattle had to do with his time as a volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club. And it's like, that is the most egregious. You're in this position of authority and trust with children, and you allegedly, well, now not allegedly, violate it because he faces sentencing on October 18th. Mm-hmm. But now he's in jail awaiting a murder charge. So it's like, okay, a little too late to protect the community and to protect his girlfriend from him. So again, just, I don't know how many more examples we have to have on the show of the complete breakdown of our criminal justice system before people vote differently.
Right.
Before, and we were just this morning, we were just at the, Dave Reichert had his campaign kickoff breakfast for governor. And one of the things I appreciated listening to him talk is about how much he's focused on public safety.
Yes.
Like, hey, this isn't right versus left. This is just common sense. We can't allow this to continue. And in listening to him, I couldn't help But think about how different his messaging is from someone like Bob Ferguson, who wants to claim that he cares about public safety, but every single action that he takes completely disregards that.
Absolutely.
Absolutely insane. Ugh. It's really devastating.
It's really scary. It's scary.
I also wonder how long is it going to be before some of these victims and their families mm-hmm. just sue. Start to sue. And then, right. I mean, I know it's taxpayer money, but at the end of the day, when you have these really, and we've had how many examples of violent, dangerous criminals who have been released on absolutely insanely low amounts of bail or no bail, and they go on to hurt somebody else. If I were a family member, I would sue. I would sue and try to force someone's hand to change the trajectory of things. So it just makes me so, so upset.
Well, and I mean, just to go back to the Reichert event, he used the two daughters of the man that was killed at the Red Door Bar. I mean, Kelly Tarp and her sister were both there to yeah. introduce him because they are still in this fight. Their mom survived the attack, but they're in this fight to keep Timothy Pauly in jail. So yeah. even after he's sentenced for the murder of their father and trying to kill their mother, it still becomes like their mom and them have had this lifelong battle of keeping him in jail. That's right. unbelievable to me that they can continue to victimize the victims because our system is just set up to help the criminal.
Right. It's and that's wild. What Dave Reichert said is like the system is set up to help the criminal and to put the burden on the victim and the yep. victim's family. And that's not right. That's not how it's supposed to be. No. I mean, innocent until proven guilty, you know, no cruel and unusual punishment. But we're so far from that in Washington state. And to think that I don't know if it's just a lack of paying attention and apathy or just a real obsession with voting for people with a D next to their name. I just don't know how anyone thinks we can continue to vote for the same people, the same party that's been in charge for 40 years with a complete legislative trifecta for the past 8 legislative sessions and think, yeah, things will get better.
Right. I think
that's just crazy.
I think that's the issue here is that a lot of people who vote for D's right. End up not assigning blame here. They just yeah. say, oh, well, that's society. Society's got in trouble.
It's no. COVID.
Oh, that was COVID. Yeah, they fall for the other excuses that Democrats have given them in this state.
Yeah, it's wild.
Wild.
Absolutely wild. All right, Nicole, thank you. And thank you for calling we reached out to the Snohomish County Prosecutor's Office to try to get their perspective on this. That's the King County Prosecuting Attorney's perspective is they're like, hey, Snohomish County kind of had this ongoing thing. And so we were taking a step back. Not sure I necessarily agree with that, but all right. Oh, this next story is just all the work we do. All the work we do to try to get people, reasonable, rational people to stand up for themselves, to say no to the fringes, to not let fringes and the fear of what fringe activists might call them stop them from speaking up about what's right. So I have a disappointing story. I'm disappointed today. I should have called Sheriff Derek Sanders in Thurston County, who's a friend of the show, right? Mm-hmm. So I gave him, he's been on a bunch of times, so I gave him the benefit of the doubt. I called him before we did this segment today, and I just basically said, hey, since I like you, I won't just go rail on you before I actually talk to you. I'm still going to rail on the decision that he ultimately made. But this is a very surprising thing coming from Sheriff Sanders, but I'm going to talk about it and we'll go through it. So we've been talking a lot about the Olympia School District. And in November, there are Olympia School District board seats on the ballot. And we've been talking about some of those races and how it's really important to make sure incumbents don't get their seats again and that common sense parents who want to kind of strip the school of this identity obsession around race and gender and get back to the job of actually teaching our kids. So anyway, there is a school board candidate. Nicole, I'm going to butcher his name. I'm going to absolutely butcher it.
I probably won't help say it.
Durocher.
I'm going to go with that.
Durocher.
Frank. We like to call him Frank.
Yes, Frank Durocher. So Alicia Perkins, who's an Olympia School District mom, who we've had on the show many times, mm-hmm. she also has a blog called OSD Rescue, and she published a story. Here's the headline. Sheriff Sanders revokes school board endorsement. So Sheriff Derek Sanders, who is just a common sense guy, he had decided to endorse a common sense school board candidate in Frank Durocher. God, that's a tough name. Well, the activists didn't like that the fringe activists who want to keep someone who aligns with their ideology in the school board, who want someone who's going to go in there, who's going to be obsessed with dividing kids on the basis of race, who's going to be obsessed with transgender issues in school as opposed to, you know, teaching kids how to actually succeed in life. So they were not happy with this, not happy at all. She goes on to write in this blog post, the endorsements for Dorosher enraged some activists, many of whom hold leadership positions in Thurston County Democrats and other local progressive political parties. In addition, Stephanie Scott, a candidate for North Thurston School Board, also entered the fray. A relentless character assassination had already been underway on Dorosher for months as his opponent was their endorsed candidate for the same position. What are Dorsher's sins? Well, he attended a petition signing event to reverse Bill 5599, which advocates for parental rights in their minor children's medical care. So let me stop there for a second. So one of the reasons these activists, we're just going to call him Frank, I can't say his freaking last name. One of the reasons these activists don't want Frank to be elected to the Olympia School Board is because he attended my event in Lacey. He attended my event. We have video from it if you need a reminder. He attended the event I held for Referendum 101, which would have reversed an absolutely disastrous bill in Senate Bill 5599. I was protested at that event with people calling me anti-transgender. And I spoke to some of the activists, and we had a perfectly fine conversation about the reason I was opposed to Senate Bill 5599, but that did not stop them from telling the whole internet that I was anti-transgender. And now this poor school board candidate, simply because he attended my event to sign that referendum, they don't want him on the school board, and they're using that as a way now to attack Sheriff Derek Sanders for endorsing him. So Alicia Perkins posted a couple of the comments from activists who were at that protest against me, saying, oh, Sheriff Sanders is a horrible person for endorsing this guy for school board. Teela Rose, who's an activist, who I spoke to at the event. We had a perfectly fine conversation. I even invited her on the show.
Yeah, but
now she's still ringing the bell about how anyone who attended that event is anti-transgender.
Yeah, I reached out to her. She did originally, I believe, say that she would come on, and then she decided she would
against
not come on.
Yeah. Well, she goes on Facebook, the trans community and her families are less safe in Thurston County as Sheriff Sanders comes out to endorse Olympia School Board candidate and anti-trans campaigner Frank Dorosher, simply to tap into the racist and transphobic voter base of Thurston County to endorse Proposition 1. Proposition 1 is something that's going to be on the ballot that is going to help with funding for law enforcement in Thurston County. Another activist who was at this event, following up for those who've asked, Frank Dorosher's post in June supporting an anti-trans petition signing event hosted by the owners of Cutter's Point, hosted by me, where myself and others observed him handing out campaign signs. I encourage you to visit his campaign Facebook and watch video recordings of various candidate forums to get to know the platform, da 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 da. And then they go on to say he's like a threat to trans youth. So anyway, this is the normal stuff. It's the stuff that I faced when I held these Referendum 101 signing events with these very same activists who shouted really loud online, who made a big stink, who called me transphobic, who tried to attack Cutter's Point Coffee Company for hosting the event to the point where I was kind of afraid that the owners of the coffee shop would cancel the event, because nobody wants to be subjected to that much attack online, especially when your business is in jeopardy. But Cutter's Point Coffee Company, they're like, no, we're going to do this. We're going to stand up for what's right. We know you're not hateful or a bigot, and we're not either, but we believe in parental rights. And so we went through with the event. We don't care what the activists say. We know the activists don't know anything about us. They don't know anything about me or my character. And all they do is try to bully people and label people to get what they want. So we didn't back down, which is why I was really disappointed to see that in the face of those attacks from fringe lunatics, Sheriff Derek Sanders has caved. He decided to revoke his endorsement of the school board candidate that the activists wanted him to not support. Alicia Perkins says in her article, in a disappointing and frankly surprising turn of events, by Tuesday, October 10th, Sheriff Sanders told Dorosher he was revoking his endorsement. Sanders made clear that the decision was a result of Dorosher's opponents consistently attacking him and telling people he is transphobic for endorsing Frank. Sanders also acknowledged that no evidence was produced supporting that claim, but the public pressure campaign against him was simply not sustainable. So, look, I've got to say, I'm a little surprised by it. I expressed that I did speak to Sheriff Sanders this morning and just expressed that I was like, this is actually a surprise that it would just take a few angry activists on the internet to change course, but it's so much more detrimental than that. And look, I get it, and I don't know everything going on in the full rationale. I know that, you know, Proposition 1 is on the ballot, which is important for police funding, so maybe he felt like, I just can't be involved in this political fray right now, or whatever it is. But the thing is that to think that giving in to these activists and rescinding this endorsement would stop them, would satisfy them, of course it's not going to. Of course it's not going to change their opinion of you. They already have an incorrect opinion of you. They already believe that some flimsy tie to a school board candidate who has some flimsy tie to an event I held makes the sheriff a transphobe, makes the sheriff a racist. The sheriff isn't a transphobe. He's not a bigot. He's not a racist. He knows that. I know that. You know that. Who cares what fringe activists on the internet have to say? How many people are really listening to that? So it might seem like the easier thing to do in the moment to just say, I can't deal with this. I'm going to give in. But it erodes so much of what we're fighting for on this show. We're fighting to make sure that reasonable people, right, left, and center, can have their voice heard, can stand up for what they believe in. And they're not afraid of what the fringes on either side will call them or say about them, because they know that what they're fighting for and what they're standing up for is much more important. And, you know, true to what I knew would happen here, the activists are still going after Sheriff Sanders. What he did in rescinding the endorsement isn't enough. Now they want some sort of big formal apology. And they also want him to move away from his position of supporting school resource officers returning to the Olympia School District. They weren't going to stop with him rescinding the endorsement of this candidate. Alicia wrote in her article, having acquiesced to these demands, Sanders continues to be pressured to do more. He's now being asked by the same activist to issue a public statement essentially atoning for the error of his ways. Not only about having the audacity to associate with the likes of Frank Doroscher, but for his wrong opinion on law enforcement altogether. So what does Sheriff Sanders do now? Does he just keep giving in? So you give a mouse a cookie. You just keep giving in. Well, you know, I gave in and I rescinded the endorsement and now they're still attacking me. Do I give in? And what? Do I, you know, fall to my knees and beg the online activists for forgiveness? No, because nothing you say or do is ever going to be enough for them. They want you to do exactly what they want, to think exactly like they think, and you're not going to. So trying to please them is a losing proposition. And look, I have a lot of respect for Sheriff Derek Sanders. I am sure that he's under immense pressure. And I don't know if Proposition 1 has something to do with it, that he really just wants to make sure that there's not a lot going on that's controversial right now. But this isn't going to change things. It's not going to change how they feel about you. And I just go back to, I think this is an example of the exact opposite of what we're trying to preach. You know, the fringes are scary. They will call you names. They'll try to get you fired from your job. They'll try to ruin relationships or whatever they can do to make you too scared to speak up, too scared to take a stand. And when reasonable people become too scared to do what's right, that's how a state like Washington goes downhill in the way that it has. That's what leads to it. And so we need reasonable people like Sheriff Sanders to be willing to take a stand and not to back down to activists and to the loudest voice in the room. All right, one update for you today on a story we talked about yesterday. This got a lot of attention on social media, which I'm kind of surprised by, because whenever I do stories on public records requests, it can be a little bit kind of nerdy and insider baseball, but I think everyone can appreciate when something just doesn't smell right. You know, and this is one of those stories where it's fishy. I can't say for sure whether there's a conspiracy here, but something just didn't seem right. So we've talked a lot about Councilman Andrew Lewis in the city of Seattle. He's the councilman for downtown. He's trying to keep his job. I pray that he doesn't keep his job. But he killed a common sense proposal back in June that would have allowed Seattle police officers to actually arrest people for drug possession and smoking drugs in public. And at the time, we thought, well, he had said hours before he was going to support it. And then all of a sudden he turned around, shocked everyone, and cast the deciding no vote. So we had filed a public records request back at the end of June, basically looking for a very short period of time, a window of just 10 hours. We requested his text messages, his voicemails, a list of ingoing and outgoing calls, all emails just from that period of time. So a very, very narrow in scope request for just one council member. And we got a response at the time saying, okay, we'll have some records to you on or about August 18th, which I was like, okay, maybe that's just a coincidence. It's right after the primary elections. That's not going to do me much good. And then I got, you know, just a couple records on August 24th. And they were really kind of the most boring of all the records. It was just random emails that had come into the city council account with people who were angry or happy with his vote. So it really wasn't the juicy stuff of his texts and his phone calls and his voicemails and stuff. And then I got an update on August 24th when they sent me that first installment saying, hey, we'll have your next installment on or around November 10th. To which I was like, okay, now I'm suspicious, because November 10th is, of course, 3 days after the election where voters will decide whether Andrew Lewis keeps his job. So I had been kind of, you know, I pushed back a little bit to the city records office and said, hey, there's no reason it should take that long. This is a very narrow request. And they had kind of responded saying, oh, well, we're short-staffed. And I'd reached out to Councilwoman Sarah Nelson just separately, because she's a pretty new council member and she's just figuring out how things work. And so I asked her, hey, are you guys given a timeline when you get requests like this to produce documents? And she was generally saying there's no rule, but usually they can do it pretty quickly. And she had responded and she CC'd the public records unit, because she's kind of like, what's going on here? You know, why is this taking so long? It doesn't seem right. So anyway, I wanted to read to you the city's response from the public records unit after we did our story yesterday. They sent an email back to me and to Councilwoman Sarah Nelson on this thread. And they said, the public disclosure unit treats all requests and requesters in the same manner, regardless of ballot status. So basically saying, no, we're not trying to withhold these documents just because he's on the ballot. They went on to say, the council member is correct that there is some discretion left to the public disclosure officer within the scope of the Public Records Act. That discretion is based on factors such as the request itself, as well as office workload and staffing. The process for all requests includes others open concurrently to yours, requires time for collection and review. As I mentioned to Brandy in our previous correspondence, I am working to get these fulfilled in the timeliest manner possible, but we currently have an unfilled position in the public disclosure unit and I had scheduled time off. Please note that we do our best to complete requests promptly and are currently working diligently to fill yours and all requests currently open within our office. And look, I'm not going to call him a liar. I can't prove that there's anything untoward happening here, and I'm sure there is. They're short-staffed everywhere. I'm sure there is an opening in the public records unit. He had scheduled time off. I am just pointing out and letting all of you know that we have made an effort to truly get to the bottom of whether there is anything else that contributed to Andrew Lewis's vote, a very consequential vote for the city and public safety. We have tried to get access to these records before the November election. In fact, before voters start to get their ballots in like a week and a half. And this is what has got in our way, a timeline that to me seems a little bit suspicious. The city is saying, hey, we're doing our best. I guess I'll have to take them off at their word that that's the case. And maybe, Nicole, who knows? Maybe because we've talked about it 2 days in a row on the show, I'll get an email tomorrow and it'll be like, poof, magic. What do you think? What's the over under?
Now he's got it. Now they have to stick to that.
Or else it'll look suspicious. Well, I don't know. But again, there might not be anything in the emails, in the voicemails and in the text messages. It might really just be that Andrew Lewis changed his vote because people showed up and screamed loud at him. And then he's a coward and has no backbone. And he's like, okay, I'll vote a different way. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But I don't know until I see everything that happened in that time frame. The guy in the morning, He was telling people he was going to vote for it. And then the afternoon, he didn't. Something happened there. And I want to know what happened. I want to know if anybody got in his ear, etc. So anyway, that's the update from the city of Seattle. All right, coming up next in our segment, unbelievable transgender inmates getting what the prison's chief is calling a record extraordinary. Now I got to look. What did she say? Landmark. Sorry. See, I was there trying to do a tease and I forgot the word. Transgender inmates getting landmark protections in Washington prison. So we'll talk about what is going to change for inmates who identify as transgender in our prison system coming up next. But first, if you're in the market to sell your home, sure, check out a few real estate agents, give a few a call, but do not choose one until you have reached out to Wes Jones and his team at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. He and his team have an innovative marketing strategy to make sure that your listing gets the attention that it deserves and that it's looking its best when it hits the market. We asked Wes Jones what his natural course of events would be if someone comes to him and is thinking about listing their home.
I think the first step is having an idea of maybe what your home is worth, you know, and having that kind of baseline home value. And that's something that we can do complimentary. You can go to the website, sellwithwes.com. You just plug in your address and we'll get you a value range. And if you want, and if you're serious, I'll come out and do a quick, market analysis for you. That's all complimentary. And then at that time or another time, we could walk through the basic steps of what it would take to get your home ready for the market.
Yeah, and I was talking to Wes. I was listening to a testimonial from a woman who went through a real estate agent for 6 months trying to get her home sold, couldn't do it. Wes Jones stepped in, and that's all it took. He and his team know what they're doing. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. You could start by simply using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, transgender inmates are going to start getting better treatment in Washington's prison system. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Right, the Department of Corrections, this is an issue we've talked about quite a bit, and it's actually gotten national attention. We did an interview, I believe it was after, he's not with Project, James O'Keefe, I don't think he's with Project Veritas anymore, but he did this expose on female inmates at Washington's Correctional Center for Women who were freaked out because they've got biological men who are moving into their facility because they just say, hey, I'm transgender. They get moved over there. A woman, they said, has gotten pregnant. There have been other issues. One of the problems is the state absolutely clamps down on any information regarding transgender inmates. We're not allowed to file public records requests. They consider it protected information because it's like someone's health status. And so basically we can't know which inmates are transgender. We can't know which issues in the women's prison might be tied to a transgender inmate, a biological male. So as members of the media, and for you as taxpayers, we were virtually in the dark about all of this. But one thing we're not in the dark about are these landmark changes for inmates who identify as transgender. And this is really, I don't know if anywhere in the prison system there is a biological woman in a male's prison. Do we know, Nicole? There's no way to know, right? Because they won't tell us.
It would be hard to find out unless somebody let us know.
Right. But I highly doubt that. Instead, what we know to be true because of whistleblowers, et cetera, is there are an increasingly large number of biological men who, instead of spending all their years alone in a male's prison, have decided that they're going to identify as transgender and that they're going to move into the women's prison. And are some of them, did they come into prison with that? Sure. But are some of them using the system and abusing the system? Without a doubt, based on what we've heard from whistleblowers. So anyway, there was a settlement that has just been reached between the Department of Corrections and the Disability Rights of Washington. And the Department of Corrections says that this is an agreement that is going to, quote, further improve the conditions of confinement for transgender individuals. So DOC Secretary Cheryl Strange said in a statement, this is a landmark agreement, and we look forward to continuing to work closely with DRW to implement it. We have already made substantial improvements to the gender-affirming care offered to transgender incarcerated individuals in recent years, and this is another step in the right direction. Okay, so what does this settlement entail? What are the changes going to be for prison inmates who identify as transgender? Let's list them, shall we? So each prison will now have to designate a gender-affirming mental health specialist. Something tells me that we don't have the staffing in general at prisons, and now we're going to have to find staffing specifically for a mental health specialist that specializes in gender-affirming treatment. seems like a little bit of a narrow casted job position considering the current state of the prison system, but let's read on. There has to be now transgender focused training for correctional officers. Okay, I'm sure they're thrilled about that. Provide gender affirming clothing. So if you are a transgender inmate, you get special treatment and different clothing than other inmates if you request it. And this is the one that I think to me is the most egregious, because the other one's like, okay, you want a different garment of clothing. Okay. Pat downs and searches performed by a correctional officer of the gender formally requested by the transgender inmate. And we had reported previously that this is something that was proposed, but now we know that as part of this settlement, that is the case. If you are a corrections officer at one of these facilities, you might have to do a pat-down cavity search on someone of the other gender, and it is up to the inmate, based on this settlement, that pat-downs and searches performed by a correctional officer will be a correctional officer of the gender formally requested by the transgender inmate. And correctional officers just have to comply. And they've been told this, and there was a demand for bargaining around this because it made some correctional officers uncomfortable. Because if you think about it, if you're a corrections officer, a female corrections officer at the women's prison, you're not used to patting down biological men and performing searches on biological men. But now that biological male who's at your prison, regardless of what crime he's there for, can request, formally request, that you, a female corrections officer, have to be the one to pat them down. They get to choose the gender of the corrections officer that performs searches, that performs pat downs. This is insane. And what recourse is there for those corrections officers? Who that was never part of the responsibility, is an inmate got to choose, oh, what is the gender of the person who pats me down? When a woman corrections officer would have no choice but to say, okay, well, I guess now I have to also do cavity searches on biological men, even though I didn't have to do that previously. So this is just unbelievable stuff. And I go back to, you know, there are some of these things where it's like, okay, if you have someone who has identified as a gender, the opposite gender from what they were born for most of their life, and they've gone through, you know, procedures or whatever it is, and this is not something they just came to once they were in prison, I feel like there should still be a separate facility, especially if they're increasing the number of inmates who are identifying as transgender. I still feel like it just makes sense to have a separate facility for them.
If you're going to cater to them.
If you're going to cater to them.
At the same time, you have committed serious crimes.
Right.
Do you lose that kind of, I mean, it's not cruel and unusual punishment to live as your biological self. It's just not.
Some might argue it is.
I know. And then that's
what's
where
happening
I can go,
here.
And that's what I think is out of control.
Right. But it's catering to criminals.
All the time.
It's catering to criminals simply because of their preferred gender. That doesn't make any sense to me. And again, these are, in Washington State, the vast majority of people who are in our prison system are there for very serious reasons, because, you know, we don't really throw a lot of people in prison unless they've done something very, 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 very bad. And so now you're wasting your time coming up with all these ways to make them more comfortable because of their gender identity, when I have to imagine, again, could other inmates sue? Like, hey, you're not giving me special treatment for XYZ.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, if you are an inmate or a male at a prison facility and you decide, hey, those guys who are identifying as women, they're getting it pretty good over there.
Yeah, they're getting pat downs.
They get pat downs by women if they request it formally.
I mean, they're having sex in their.
Well, we know that from
whistleblowers. We know that.
Right.
They're having sex, so why not just go?
I could serve my 30 years here in the men's prison and get beaten senseless, you know,
right,
if I do something wrong, which happens in our prisons as well. So why would I not be in a prison with a bunch of women where I can get a female corrections officer to pat me down? I can bunk with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then if anything happens, the media will never find out about it. The media will never be able to request any documents about it. This is really insane stuff, and it is completely contrary to the way that the government should work.
Right. And part of our interview last time, I mean, these women are these men that decide that they're women are given sex toys. They're given toys to play with.
Well, okay. Well, it wasn't a sex toy. It was.
No, that was part of, I know no, what you're talking, a, yeah. No. I know you're talking about the stretcher, but no, that within that report, she was also given other things.
So what my understanding of it was that it was a, oh gosh, we're going to get demonetized on YouTube.
No, we're not saying it.
It's a toy.
It's stretcher, we know what you mean.
But it's meant to stretch out an artificial
vaginal
area.
But it also works as.
Right, they could certainly use it in that way.
Yes.
But that's not like. I'm not trying to defend DOC, trust me.
But I'm just adding to your list.
Right. No, I'm just saying, yeah, they'll give them a bunch of stuff, right? Yes. And it could be used that way.
Yeah.
And it's just in the name of this identity obsession and obsession around gender. And it's crazy. It's totally bizarre. It's insane that you can't call that out without, what am I? We just talked about it today. Transphobe.
I know.
It's like, no, I just think it's a little weird when we're catering to biological male convicted criminals and thrusting them into a setting with women, many of whom have spoken out to whistleblowers saying they're scared. Like, when did we stop caring about women? When did we stop caring about the safety of women? And how is it okay for any government entity to hide, to actually, they sent you guys a cease and desist when you were over at Cairo Radio, when you requested public records about transgender inmates. Mm-hmm. That's not okay. It's not normal. It doesn't make us transphobes. And even if you think it does, we don't really care. So
yeah, again, as far as transgender goes, if you're an adult, live how you want to live. Just stop making the world revolve around you.
It's the world
does not revolve around a single person.
And
it just doesn't.
There are people who consider themselves transgender who don't go to this level of crazy. And I've heard from them. I've gotten emails from people who are like, hey, I've been, you know, here's what I'm going through. And I've been doing this for 20 years. And I think this is crazy. You know, it's not like all people who identify as transgender are in this weird thing where they're like, everything has to revolve around me. Some are just like, hey, I was happier as a woman. I'm living my life. They're an adult. Do what you want to do. Do what makes you happy. And they don't thrust it on everyone else and be like, you know, it's just, this is insane. And our government and the way that they handle this is absolutely crazy. Or as I would like to say, unbelievable.
Oh, I thought you were going to add an F there.
No, I don't do that. Remember, I'm a lady.
Well, just the letter.
All right. Well, dip outside of Washington State coming up next. People in the chats are like very X-rated today. Yeah, we'll see about how long this stays monetized. It's been a long week. Okay. It's been a long week. All right. If you, I was just going to say if you need insurance, but that doesn't make sense because everybody needs insurance. Mike and I, before we got hitched, we had, you know, different insurance for our cars, and he had his home insurance. We were on all these different plans with all these different companies, and it was all just a mess. And so when First Mark Insurance approached us about being sponsors on the podcast, we thought, you know, let's take the First Mark Challenge. I had heard our friend Dory talk about it for years and years and years, and I thought, what do we have to lose? It just took us a little bit of time, and what it entailed is we had a virtual meeting with First Mark. We went through all our current insurance. We talked about our insurance needs because we knew we were way, way underinsured. They went out, they shopped the market for us, shopped the major carriers, came back and gave us recommendations. And so we ended up moving all of our insurance over to be handled by First Mark. Dave Taylor is the CEO of First Mark, and he explained what he hopes you get from the First Mark Challenge.
One of our goals that we say is that we believe everybody deserves to feel confident about their insurance. And so that's really one of our primary drivers of those conversations is we don't expect you to remember everything we talked about. But we hope that at the end of that process, you're going to feel confident that you have what you need, and also confident that if you have a question, someone's going to pick up the phone and take care of it for you down the road.
Yeah, and that's really the big thing too is, yeah, they're going to, you know, look at what companies can serve your interests best, but First Mark is taking care of all of it for you. So instead of if you've got some sort of claim, instead of having to call the company directly, you just call your friends at First Mark and like, hey, here's what happens. And they deal with it for you. And they're a local company. You're not going to have to sit and wait through some phone tree. So I've been saying this and I really mean it, that I just don't see the downside to doing the First Mark Challenge. The worst that could happen is they come back to you and say, hey, your insurance is already great. Just keep it. And then you're like, okay, well, I learned a lot in the process. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com, they work for you. All right, the state of California proving that it is hopelessly identity obsessed. This might be, out of all the weird stories that we have covered out of California, one of the most bizarre. And frankly, it's racist. I'm just going to say it's absolutely racist. So you guys know about Amber Alerts, right? You got a missing child, Amber Alert. Or I always see the Silver Alerts, which I kind of like the name of the Silver Alerts, but it's, you know, you've got a missing elderly person. And so you've got a Silver Alert up on the highway. Well, California is beginning something called Ebony Alerts. Okay. This is from CNN. New California law creates Ebony Alert to find missing Black youth and women. So the new California law will create an emergency alert system to help find missing Black youth and women between the ages of 12 and 25. Gavin Newsom signed Senate Bill 673 into law, goes into effect January 1st. It will enable the California Highway Patrol to activate the new Ebony Alert upon request from local law enforcement when a Black youth or young Black woman is reported missing under unexplained or suspicious circumstances. That's so racist.
Oh, yeah.
And here's the thing. I didn't know until this story came out that California already has something called a feather alert. So just, okay, you're sure, by the way, that that's not a joke. That they actually, that is not a joke. That's a real thing.
That is a real thing.
California already has something called a feather alert. And a feather alert is an alert when there is a missing Indigenous person.
Child, I believe.
Child. Mm-hmm. Isn't it a little racist to say feather alert?
Well, I mean, we've been told it's racist to have a sports team called the Redskins or like Tomahawks or whatever. I mean, they're changing all of these.
You know what it reminds me of? What's that Tim McGraw song that...
Indian Outlaw.
Indian Outlaw. That would absolutely be canceled today. But he's in there saying like, oh, Buffalo Briefs, Tomahawk, like any sort of absolutely stereotypical like Indian thing. And then California calls the alert the feather alert.
Yep, and that's
canceled.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's insane. And then the ebony alert. Like, that's what? Also weird.
I agree. I don't understand this. It's so racist.
But don't we, why don't you just, I feel like anytime a person goes missing under suspicious circumstances, it's very serious. Why does it matter if the person's age 12 to 25? Why does it matter if they're Black or white? Why does it matter if they're, and this one, if it's a woman? Well, like, we don't care about missing men?
Mm-hmm.
That's so, that is so narrow and strange. Either you care about people who go missing under suspicious circumstances and you just use the alert system for all of them. Not just, oh, well, okay, we got a missing youth. Okay, what is the pigmentation of their skin? Okay, gotcha there. Are they Native American? And are they like Elizabeth Warren Native American or like full-blown Native American? Okay, gotcha. We're gonna use a feather alert on this one then. Yeah. Send that out. What is that?
So the reasoning behind this is because they're upset that some of the more publicized missing people have been white female.
Fight. And I don't disagree with that.
It is. I don't disagree that those are the ones that have gotten the most attention. Exactly. I think that that doesn't mean that people don't care or won't look for the car of a missing small Black child or a missing Indigenous person or a missing Black man or missing anything. Like if you tell, I mean, you put up silver alerts. It doesn't say the race of the older person. It just says, hey, it's an older person. Don't look for a kid in a car seat. Just look for an older person driving or whatever it is. Like that's okay. I'm okay with the silver alert. So you know what you're looking for, I guess, like somebody driving or somebody being held hostage. That's
typically like someone who might have dementia, who might be driving in circles or whatever.
So you're looking for a specific, what's that? Behavior, right? Yeah. Because you're looking for an adult behavior.
Right.
But this is out of control. This is weird.
And also, if your concern is that young white women get more attention from the mainstream news media when they go missing, one, your beef is with the mainstream news media. But two, that does not preclude you from creating these alerts and also including white women. So you're basically saying like it's like a punishment. Like, oh, you're white, so the media is more likely to talk about you being missing. So we're going to only do this for Black women,
which
just do it for everyone. If you think it's serious enough where you need an alert and it could be beneficial for the highway patrol, because it does help. If you're looking for someone in a car, like an Amber Alert.
Yes.
If I'm sitting at home and I get an Amber Alert on my phone, that's not doing much. But I'm seeing it on the highway and I'm like, oh, well, maybe I'll, you know, I'll scan. I always do that too. I always like, what if they're right in front of me? And I always scan the license plates and stuff. Too. So why would you take away that tool because of the pigmentation of someone's skin? So now if you're white, everybody's got to wait till the 5 o'clock news to find out if there's an Amber Alert out for you. That doesn't make any sense.
No.
These people are insane.
Or I think they're going to send out alerts regardless, right? So you get the alert and you're like, oh, black kid's missing. I should care more about this. So let me check the car next to me or whatever it is. No, you care the same and you check what the description is and you look for that person.
They really want us to hate each other.
Oh, yeah,
they do. They really want us not only to hate each other and not only to divide us, but to make us hyper-obsessed with immutable characteristics again, like our country used to be when everybody was like, oh, black and white bathrooms. They want us to think every waking hour of every day about the differences between us and other people. And it's the opposite of where the country, and they do it in a way where they act as if they have the moral high ground, where they act as if they're righteous, but they're so, so wrong for what they're doing. I don't care if you give attention to missing kids and missing women, but to suggest that because of someone's skin color, they're less deserving of attention, and the government are making that decision. Mm-hmm. With white women who might get more attention, that's the media. The media is doing that, and we can have arguments about. I don't disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with that. It was a conversation had many times in our newsrooms about, hey, are we focusing on this case enough? Why aren't we doing that? And so the idea that the government would try to make up for what they deem as a failure of the media by being racist. This cannot be the direction we continue to go as a country. And California has absolutely lost its mind. All right. Okay. Karine Jean-Pierre, we complimented her yesterday. And now we're going to take it back.
Yeah.
Because there's a New York Post reporter. So she's always in arguments with Peter Doocy over at Fox. And that's just kind of normal by now. But there was a New York Post reporter who got very frustrated with her. His name is Steven Nelson. Because he says she's gone two seasons. I'm assuming that means two, like, rotations. Without calling on him.
I think he said since June or something like that.
Something like that. So it's been a while. Oh, two seasons, like summer and fall?
Possibly.
I don't know. But just listen to the exchange.
All right, you haven't called on me in two seasons, Karine.
And not calling on you today. Go ahead.
Right. Go ahead, sir. You should be ashamed of
that. Go ahead.
That shows disrespect to a free and independent media. It's black.
I'm going
to
call.
It's one of our country's largest and most widely read newspapers, Karine. That shows contempt for a free and independent press.
Go ahead. I'm calling on somebody who I haven't called in a long time as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, here's what makes me mad, though. And I wish, Nicole, I wish we hadn't cut that clip off so early.
Oh.
How dare you? Only because I'm less mad at Karine Jean-Pierre because that's what she does. That's what the press secretaries do. And that doesn't surprise me, that kind of behavior coming from her. What bothered me more, right after that, another reporter that she's like, I'm going to call on this person instead. He's like, thank you. And then asks his question.
Well, that's why he gets asked.
Yeah.
Though.
You cannot do that.
Caving. Yeah.
You cannot. You have to, when these things happen, we've talked about it before, you have to have a united front as a press corps. Because if they attack one of you, then they're attacking all of you. If you have a White House press secretary or a governor or a King County executive or whatever, and this is why I've been so, so adamant about defending Jonathan Cho and so angry with the mainstream media here for not, is like, you don't think that if they get away with what they're doing to Jonathan Cho, that they're not going to turn around and do it to you? Or if there's a politician of a different political party, you're going to be okay if the roles are reversed? You're not.
Well, and we've heard stories about it. We've heard stories about from reporters who say, oh, I can't ask that question or I can't do that because then they'll hold it against me. So they know that behavior happens and it affects the way they report.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I've heard that specifically from many a couple of different reporters and our different stations that have said, like, we can't do that because it'll be held against us.
Well, because you're worried about access, right? Access is everything. I don't care about access. If you don't want to talk to me as a politician, I'm sure as heck going to talk about you anyway. That's fine. You don't have come in and have a reasonable, rational conversation. But, you know, there have been times where there have been good examples of this. When Jim Acosta lost his press credentials under Donald Trump, which I thought was absolutely an abuse of power and inappropriate, the correspondence Association came out, Fox News came out, defended Jim Acosta, and they were a united front because they knew, you know, they're but by the grace of God, go I. And so, you know, to not see it happen so often, and in Seattle, Jonathan Cho is a good example, to not see the media worried about the ramifications of, at one point, Jonathan Cho was being physically blocked by King County Sheriff's or the King County executive staff from entering a press event, physically blocked. And no one in the mainstream media thought, hey, maybe we shouldn't go in. Maybe I should object and say, well, I'm not going to go in if you're not letting him go in. So that's a failure of the media. That's Karine Jean-Pierre doing what Karine Jean-Pierre does. That is a failure of the media to hold her accountable.
I really don't like her eye rolls and her dismissive.
Yeah, she's the worst press secretary in my lifetime, for sure. Okay, we'll get to questions and comments from the live stream. We'll also hear from Zach Abraham coming up about how to manage your risk with the current situation globally. But first, I've been talking about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Around this time last year, I was just feeling not great about myself. I had gained more than 40 pounds during the pandemic. I saw some pictures of myself at an event with Nicole, and I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot look like that on my wedding day. I want to look like myself. And so I started the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan around November 1st. And I lost more than 30 pounds, almost 30 pounds by the end of the year. And I kept going from there and felt absolutely fantastic on my wedding day. I recommend the program to anyone who can use a little structure. I mean, not every weight loss program is for every person. This one really worked for me because of the structure. But also, I didn't have to do any strenuous workout routines. There were no drugs or injections or anything like that. So my best advice to you is, if you've been thinking about it, schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, questions and comments from the live stream, shall we? Miranda says, hi, by the way, everyone. Nicole and I FaceTimed with her.
We did.
She's looking and sounding pretty rough, but really, really positive attitude.
Yep. It's going to take a while to recover, and she sounds like she's up for it.
Yeah. One thing that I don't think anybody in the family realized is that she was on paralytics for so long while she was intubated that she's basically lost function in her arms and legs. Like, she can't walk. She can't lift up her arms. It'll come back over time, but she has to go through a lot of therapy. So we just talked to her today, and she's just, I mean, you can tell she's just brimming with gratitude to be alive. I mean, honestly, I've just never, she sounds like a totally different person. Anyway, Michelle Traina, I work for the state and was pleasantly surprised to see an email from Inslee denouncing Hamas's actions. Yes, there have been some, and even Bernie Sanders, although, you know, it was kind of a nuanced thing, but I thought Bernie Sanders, for someone who I expected to maybe say something a little defending Hamas-y, I actually thought his statement was really good, and it was nuanced, and he did talk about, hey, you know, in Gaza there are a lot of innocent people who didn't do anything or who didn't support Hamas who are being hurt in the strikes. And so I don't mind nuance, but certainly it should be a no-brainer to defend or to denounce Hamas's actions and defend Israel's right to defend itself. And gosh, we played that video with Rashida Tlaib yesterday, where Jackie Heinrich of Fox News is chasing her down the hallway saying, will you condemn children being beheaded? And she didn't say a word. It was a crazy piece of video. H says, children are not a priority in the state until they want to change their gender. Yeah, or, you know, unless their skin is a certain color and you have districts like Olympia that will give them, you know, put them in groups by themselves to protect them in safe spaces from white kids. Super strange. Leland Taylor, is that a $50 super chat?
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, that might be the biggest super chat we've ever gotten.
I think so.
Bill Biz maybe did one once.
Maybe he did
one. We can't forget about Bill. That's our sugar daddy, okay?
He really is.
Now we got two. I don't know. I'm going to start like a college fund for my kids based on Bill Biz's super chats. So I'm just going to like sneak those $20 into a college fund. That's a good way to use the super chats.
Yeah. Are you having a child?
No, I don't have anything to announce. I kind of want one, but anyway, wow, really off track today.
Wow.
I've had a heck of a week. Leland says, Sheriff Sanders unfortunately has shown his true colors. He has chosen popularity and future office over truth. Acquiescing to the left only gives them power they didn't have. Councilman Lewis and Sheriff Sanders have something in common, weakness. Oh, that's a blunt one. And look, I like Sheriff Sanders a lot, and I think he's really stood up for communities around the sex offender issue. He's been on this show talking about weak activist judges. And, you know, I think he felt like he was in a tough position and didn't want this drama to overshadow other things. But I absolutely disagree with his decision to give in to the mob. You have a tiny group of people, and we're going to let them dictate something as important as the future of your child's education, because they're upset. And they all they can do is call you names, and they don't want to debate anything on the merits. And we're going to give in to them? Can't do it. It takes us backward. It takes us backward. We can't have that. All right. Jerks Take My Names. Is that a screen? Jerks Take My Names. Says, voting for change, but got my voter pamphlet, and it has three judicial races, all but one running unopposed. Yeah, I saw that on mine as well. It's really hard, and I've said this before, and perhaps we should do something more in-depth on it. It's really hard to run as to beat an incumbent in a judicial race. There are different election rules for judicial races, and so it's just really hard to overcome incumbency, which is something that I think has to change. All right, Kimberly Peterson, I cannot understand these progressives. Aren't they supposed to be inclusive and accepting? Yet when you do not agree with them, they call you a racist. So tired of them. Yeah, somebody made a good point. I can't even remember who it was on X about, I think it was about Rashida Tlaib, about here you have someone who spent the last 4 years calling like everyone under the sun a Nazi, and then she's defending the behavior of people who are slaughtering Jews. Performative politics at its finest, at its worst, actually. C. Davidson says, check on how much this is costing taxpayers of Washington State. We are paying for the babies these women are having in prison. They call $1 million babies in the system. Yeah, we heard stories like that from whistleblowers of at least one woman getting pregnant, having $1 million baby. They call it that because, you know, then they can turn around and sue. And, oh, I got impregnated in prison because there was a biological male in my cell. There's a bunch of crazy stories. And the real frustration from a journalistic perspective is we cannot confirm them. I mean, a lot of the times what tipsters and whistleblowers can do is they can alert you to something that you can confirm through more official means. So you can, because there's a difference for me between a source and a whistleblower. And I don't use those two words interchangeably. A source is someone who is tried and true tested for me, who I've been getting information from for a long time. And I know that I can take what they tell me. I know with certitude that it's accurate, and I can move forward with it. A whistleblower might be tipping me off to something, but they might not have documentation. And so it sucks when you have a whistleblower who you think is giving you good information, but when you try to go through official means like a public records request, they stop you in your tracks because, you know, there's so many protections out there for transgender individuals in our prison system. All right, let me see here. Tracy says, there is a high school in Graham that used to be the Bethel Braves, but now is the Bethel Bison because Braves... Because Native American?
Yeah.
But California can have a feather?
Right.
A feather?
That's what I'm alert. Saying. That's what I'm saying.
That's so strange.
Yep. I just went to a football game. It was the Shore Crest, I think. Yeah. And I think they used to be the Shore Crest. It might have been the Tomahawks. I can't remember what their previous, but it was something. And they changed it to the, oh gosh, what was it? It's a play on words. It's like the something rays, stingray, not stingrays, it's like shore rays or
something lame.
It's something lame.
Yeah, there was a college back home called the NDSU, the Fighting Sioux, and I think they had
to
change that. So
storm rays.
Anyway, well, apparently, you know, it's anyway, I'm gonna get in trouble. Dee says, if someone silver alerted my mom, she'd be offended. Black and Native women do go missing at exponentially higher rates than other demographics, so I see the need, but just make an alert system for everyone. Get everyone home safe. Again, I agree. You can say, okay, the media is not doing its job, and the media is obviously racist because they're only featuring white women. Mm-hmm. So let's just, you know, hedge our bets and have an alert system for everyone in case the media decides that you're not cute enough or whatever enough. Or
right. Adult.
Or you're not going to bring in enough ratings to put you on the news. So I totally agree. Get everyone home safe.
An Amber Alert was named after a child that went missing. So I feel like you're kind of taking from that as well. Like Amber Alert, her parents, I forget her last name, but I do know the story. But her parents fought very hard for Amber Alerts to happen.
Right.
And then to make them
water it down
with two others that are not named after her. I don't know. It just seems, yes, I'm with Daryl there.
I agree. All right, Tracy says, different alerts are only going to muddy the waters and take away from the urgency of a missing abducted person. That's a good point that we didn't even bring up, which is, gosh, if there's an alert for every individual type of case, color of skin, whatever your race is, and then it's like, okay, well, what is this today? Like, what am I looking out for? Feather alert, even saying those two words, even saying feather alert and ebony alert, I feel like I'm going to get canceled.
I know.
But that's what California called it.
I know. It's wild.
Anyway, wild. All right. Before we get to sanity check, we've been talking about our friend Zach Abraham over at Bulwark Capital. And every Thursday we have him on the show so we can all become financial whizzes and survive. Whizzes?
Whiz.
But what is the plural for whiz?
I think it's still whiz.
Financial whizzes?
No, just whiz.
Just whiz? Financial. Anyway, it's one of these things where I just can't speak.
I'll look it up.
You know, it's a good thing I don't speak for a living. And we've been trying to get advice from him on the state of the economy around Bidenomics. And, you know, we're all going to just protect our assets so we can retire comfortably. But one of the things I wanted to ask him about this week is just his advice, given what's happening globally. I mean, you can hedge your bets and have a risk management strategy. And sometimes you just cannot predict what's going to happen geopolitically, you know, domestically or internationally. Zach Abraham, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we've been talking a lot with you about kind of risk management. We were talking a couple weeks ago about Bidenomics and how to manage our risk when that comes crashing down. But then I look at what's happening, you know, in Israel and internationally and all things like that always impact the market. So is there any way to really manage the risk associated if I'm nearing retirement when there is a major world event like that?
Yeah, there is. So one of the best ways to boost your returns over the long run is to limit drawdowns. Now, is that really an important topic when you're 40 years old and you're funding a 401k? No, the biggest difference will be made, right? How much money you're putting in? Do you keep funding that 401k even when markets go down? And that's really going to make the biggest difference. Do I think that you can get better returns over time being in a risk managed strategy with us? Yeah, but where it's very important is in retirement, right? Because in retirement, you know, if we're working and something really bad happens economically, and let's say our 401k takes a 45% hit, it has zero impact on our life, right? It's not fun to look at the numbers, right? But it has zero impact on our life. Whereas when you're retired, you take a 40 or 50% hit, we have to do things differently at that point because you need money out of it. And let's say the 4.5% draw you were pulling out of your account, right? You take a 50% hit, that's a 9% withdrawal out of your account. Your money's not going to last when you're withdrawing at that rate. So I think it's really important to illustrate to people, you know, I think proper risk management will enhance your returns regardless of who you are. Once you move into retirement, it's an absolute necessity. And it's crazy to me that it's not done more often. So yes, we can. And we use very different tools to do it, right? A buddy of mine, I think, has a great way he puts this. He goes, Zach, you know, we never know when a car wreck is going to happen. But he goes, we know environments when they're more likely. He goes, you know, if we're cruising around on a wide open highway, 80 miles an hour in the middle of the day in the summer, he goes, you still need to watch what you're doing, but you can do 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. You're probably going to be fine, right? You're going over through that same highway in December. You know, there's some freezing rain, you know, nasty. You're going to drive slower, right? That is an environment that is more conducive to crashes. So we never know exactly when it's going to happen. But there is this common myth out there that nobody knows when bad things are going to happen in markets. You never know for sure, but you can tell when the environment is there. So we look for those environments. What we use really varies depending on the environment and the circumstances. But there's this belief out there that you just got to take what the market gives you. And in retirement, it's just wrong. What is my risk if I'm being a little too risky in retirement? It's we make a little less, right? Maybe instead of 10%, we make 8%. Well, if that saves us from 140% decline, then it's well worth it, right? And I just think people think about retirement in the wrong way, which is in retirement, look, we want to make money. We're a fiduciary. We get paid based on how much money you have with us. So the more your money grows, the more we make, right? We're on the same side of it. So I've obviously got no problem putting up good returns. But when I'm looking at people that are retired, right, the amount that we make them in a single year is not of the utmost importance. What is important is that money finances the rest of their life.
Good advice. Zach Abraham, knowyourriskradio.com. We appreciate it. And we'll see you back on the show next week.
Fantastic, Brandy. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So if you're planning for retirement, you want to make sure that you can manage your risk against things like what's happening overseas right now. Visit knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. Reach out to Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. All right. Let's get to our closing sanity check. John Fetterman has something to say about the quality of politicians we're sending to Congress. So John Fetterman, who probably shouldn't be a United States senator, has had some health issues. And look, that's not the man's fault. I mean, the health issues come up, and certainly we've seen our fair share of members of Congress who probably are, and the president for that matter, who probably are not in a good enough place mentally, physically, to be able to do their jobs to the best of their ability. But John Fetterman, among the many things he might lack, is also a little bit of self-awareness. Here he is on Colbert talking about the quality or lack thereof of our current political class.
You all should need to know that America is not sending their best and brightest, you know, to Washington, D.C. Yes. Like, sometimes you literally just can't believe, like, you know, these people are making the decisions that are, you know, determining the government here. It's actually scary.
You don't say. It is actually scary.
I do think he was in on it. I think he knows he shouldn't be there. He's in on it.
I don't know if he's in on it, but even Stephen Colbert was looking at him like, are you insane? Do you realize that this is going to be a gem that's going to be used on social media and on Sanity Check on the Undivided podcast? All right, that has been your Sanity Check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We have a wonderful, wonderful episode of Sundays with Subscribers lined up for you this week. The terrible tale of a Seattle landlord who is living in his van with his dog because a squatter, with the help of Seattle City policies, has taken over his home. So don't miss that coming up this Sunday. You can subscribe by signing up at undividedpod.com.